from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up in the first half of the hour, turning back the tide of violence in Richmond. It's been another bloody month in the East Bay City. A recent murder pushed the number of homicides to 21, the total number of killings for all of last year. We'll hear what's behind the rash of violence and what's being done to stop it. Then, Governor Brown signs a new law giving undocumented college students more access to private financial aid. It comes 4 weeks after vetoing a bill to help farm workers unionize. We'll examine the governor's relationship with Latino voters. And we'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny, and we're splitting this hour in two. We begin with a story that is sadly familiar, violence in the city of Richmond. After a rash of 9 killings this month, there are already as many homicides as there were all of last year in that city. Richmond police officers are now teaming up with Contra Costa County Sheriff's deputies to patrol unincorporated parts of the county in search of guns. And joining us now to talk about what's happening and why are the city's police chief, Chris Magnus, and also the mayor of Richmond, Gail McLaughlin. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Mayor McLaughlin, let me begin with you. What's your take on what's behind this latest rash of murders?
Well, you know, we have this ongoing financial crisis, you know, nationally, which has hit Richmond hard. You know, we have a high unemployment rate, and we also know that we long-term have had a high unemployment rate, and we certainly have put in a lot of services and a lot of opportunities, but, you know, resources are always the question, and we have some new ideas that I'd love to share with you in this discussion.
And we'll get to that in a moment, but I'm just trying to find out if there is something different in Richmond, because, of course, all levels of government across the country and throughout California, of course, are suffering from budget cuts and service cuts. I'm not hearing, and maybe I'm just not hearing it, but it seems like this problem has not happened to the extent that it's happening in Richmond in other cities, say Oakland or San Francisco. But, you know, maybe I'm mistaken about that.
Well, you know what? Last year we had a 50% decrease in our homicide rate. And overall, for the last several years, our crime has decreased. So we see now, so far this year, we've had the same amount of homicides as last year. Of course, we hope to hold the line here and not have any more. And our police have been doing an incredible job with their community-involved policing. But, you know, we have histories of, you know, social and racial injustice in Richmond that we're overcoming. So, you know, Oakland had a huge increase last year. So we can come from a really good year, and we're hoping to hold the line and make this a decent year as well. But we have seen some problems in the last month, for sure.
Chief Chris Magnus, what would you add to what the mayor said?
Well, I agree with that. I think that Richmond violent crime is largely concentrated in several smaller neighborhoods within the city. That doesn't make it any better. And for the people who live in those neighborhoods, it's really very rough going, no question about it. But I think our urban crime situation is actually very similar to many other cities, not only in the Bay Area, but nationally. And we struggle with some of the same dynamics that lead to the kind of crime we've experienced lately. There are a lot of young men, particularly young men of color, who are living in neighborhoods where there are very limited opportunities. Many of them are coming out of prison without any services waiting for them. They're struggling with lack of employment, with lack of education, with substance abuse issues, with mental health issues. They have a lot of anger, a lot of frustration about what the future looks like. In some cases, I think they see no future. And so with all of those dynamics at play, I don't think it's particularly surprising that there are a lot of shootings and that we've had a lot of homicides. And I think this is, unfortunately, a dynamic that many, many other cities are facing.
Though that list of problems you rattle off, they don't really sound like law enforcement problems as much as social service program problems.
Well, I think, you know, there are problems that we as a community all share. And the frustrating part is that, you know, as a community, and I think the mayor pointed this out, I mean, we have limited resources to deal with many of these problems. You know, the state has taken a huge hit financially. At the federal scene, we're seeing less and less federal dollars coming our way. And, of course, at the same time, you have many hundreds of young men returning to the community from prison, some of them far worse off than even when they went in. And the services that, you know, we would hope might be there to prevent some of this kind of recidivism that you can expect, they're simply not there, and that's a real problem.
Mayor McLaughlin, we alluded at the top to this new gang task force, cooperation with the county sheriff's department. Tell us the thinking behind that and how it's working or how it's going to work.
Right, and the chief can certainly expand on this, but I think you're referring to the ceasefire project program. And what we're doing is going to be bringing in those most at risk, those involved in these street sex, those most at risk for either shooting or being shot at, and, you know, giving them the opportunity to really take advantages of the services we have, or they'll know that the police department will be watching them very closely, and the likelihood that they'll end up shot or in prison is very, very likely. So that's a really positive thing. I do want to touch on what the chief was referring to in terms of the level of released, formerly incarcerated people that we have on the streets of Richmond. And just this past Saturday, we had a meeting where a community meeting whereby a group, and this was a group that included a group called Cisco, our Office of Neighborhood Safety, and also Pacific Institute, that did a survey of the kind of needs of formerly incarcerated people and came up with some really good recommendations. And our police department is involved in this as well. We're going to be creating a one-stop center for released individuals from prison where they can find out what services are there. Our housing authority director is working on trying to get housing units available with vouchers.
But I hear you saying two things. I hear you saying on the one hand that services have been cut, there isn't enough funding, and then you're saying we've got a ceasefire program where you're bringing young folks in and to help them access services, or else you say they're going to be watched by the police. So how does that work? Is that a contradiction at all?
Well, like I said, we have what we're doing is setting up a situation where we're working with the service providers that we have all in one place. And to have them, you know, what it means is people have to work harder, our service providers have to work harder to outreach and find whatever is available. And through our housing department, we will have opportunities for housing for $50 a month is what we're looking at, and that will give them opportunities for housing. And, of course, we'll need those volunteers to help to provide, you know, support for these individuals. And we need the county mental health services, which will be drawn in. So we're kind of centralizing our services, which I think will help a lot. We also want to ban the box. Ban the box is there's a box on the applications that says you have to check if you were formerly incarcerated. The city of Richmond, as an employer, as an organization for city jobs, has already banned the box. But we want to find out to what degree we can authorize private industry in the city of Richmond.
And just say with the theory there being that if they do check the box, it makes it much less likely they're going to get hired.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're talking with Gail McLaughlin, the mayor of Richmond, and the police chief of that city, Chris Magnus, about the recent rash of murders and also the challenges that cities like Richmond are facing in the face of budget cuts throughout the country. If you'd like to join us this morning on Forum, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. Chief Magnus, you mentioned, as did the mayor, all the number of formerly incarcerated young men, mostly, who are arriving on the streets of Richmond. And we're also moving toward a new policy starting October. All counties in California are going to take responsibility for low-level, nonviolent parolees. That means you're going to have sort of more responsibility for those folks even than you do now. How concerned are you about that looming deadline, October 1st?
Well, I'm concerned, but I'm also grateful that we have a really good working relationship with our county probation department. We have a new county probation chief, Phil Cater, here in Contra Costa County, and he's been leading a number of discussions that have involved the sheriff's department, the district attorney, service providers, mental health services, judges, a whole range of folks that are working together to try to address this. So at least we're really on the same page about, you know, not only how we monitor some of these individuals that are coming back, but also how we can better provide services to them and, you know, take the steps that can reduce the likelihood that they're going to commit new crimes. That's not an easy process, though, and when you have a system that's already underserving, you know, the population that's been returning now through the regular parole and probation process, and then you're talking about adding, you know, several hundred individuals starting in October and then more as time goes on. And of course, you know, these folks come back to the communities that they're from originally, so you're going to have a lot of people coming back to Richmond that have been incarcerated. You know, that's going to put a burden on the existing service providers. It's going to put a burden on the police department, and it challenges the community in a lot of ways. But I think that it also is an opportunity for us to say, you know, now is really the time when community members have to step up, and whether that's in the form of faith-based leaders coming forward and being engaged in mentoring, or schools doing more outreach, or employers looking at ways that, you know, they can hire some folks in non-traditional capacities. I think there's opportunities there, but it is going to require some real planning and work.
All right, let's go to the phones again. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Good morning, Charlie. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to ask the mayor whether her fight against the proposed casino in Point Mulati, which would have brought about 17,000 jobs and about $20 million a year in public funding, was now not such a great idea, particularly in light of the police chief's comments earlier that the lack of jobs, the lack of opportunity and hope and dignity is one of the underpinnings of this violence, particularly for poor minority youth. And I just can't reconcile how the city and the mayor and the city council opposed that project, which would have provided so many jobs, so much opportunity. And I'd like to have the mayor try to defend that decision again.
Mayor McLaughlin?
Absolutely. First of all, that 17,000 job figure was something that was way overinflated, which was certainly verified by many people who looked into this. The fact is that any jobs that would have come from a casino would not have been there for 5+ years. The funding wasn't available. The cleanup of the property is still in process. And the fact that a casino is known to bring more crime would have caused more resources from the city for police, for fire, for just in general the social ills and the burden on our community. So, no, I do not at all have not changed my position on really feeling glad that our community, first of all, voted to advise the city council in the election to reject the casino option, and then the city council followed the advice of the community.
All right.
And did indeed.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Again, 866-733-6786, forum at kqed.org is the email. We'd love to hear from you, in particular, if you live or work in Richmond, what you think the city should be doing or is doing a good job of that maybe doesn't get enough attention. Also, if you're an employer, if you work in the city or own a business in the city of Richmond, we'd love to get your thoughts as well. 866-733-6786, the number to call. Chris Magnus, Police Chief Magnus, some cities in the Bay Area, and I'm thinking Oakland and San Francisco in particular, are using injunctions against gang members. There's some controversy about that. Have you considered that in Richmond? And if not, why not?
Well, we actually did a lot of looking at the possibility of using gang injunctions, and we analyzed, you know, what are the types of gangs and gang environments where an injunction might make sense. we did not find that given the makeup of, you know, the gangs in Richmond, and I'm almost reluctant to call them gangs, although I'm not trying to soft sell in any way the dynamics of the violence and the problems that are involved, but what we really have are sort of street sets of young men who live in neighborhoods that, you know, are going after other folks in different neighborhoods, but the situation is so fluid it almost borders on chaotic at times, and it really doesn't lend itself to an injunction model, which I think if put in place in the wrong area and without the support of the community can create more divisiveness and problems than it solves. What we've decided instead is to really identify individuals that we know are involved in some of this behavior. There's really a relatively small number of young men that we would consider active shooters or shot callers. And, you know, we want to be very aggressive in going after them and holding them accountable for the chaos and the heartbreak that they're causing in neighborhoods. But at the same time, we don't want to alienate an entire neighborhood or an entire community by doing this in a way that really isn't thoughtful and based on good intelligence gathering and good crime data. So we just don't think that the injunction model is a good fit for Richmond right now. If it's working in other communities, you know, that may be something that they're going to have to sort through there. But here we're trying some other approaches.
All right, let's go to the calls now. And Melinda is on the line from Richmond. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I live in one of the very nice and affluent neighborhoods of Richmond, Point Richmond, and I've also lived in the Marina Bay neighborhood. Those are neighborhoods that are bringing in a lot of money for the city, and I'm curious about why that's not going farther to provide social services for the rest of the city.
Mayor McLaughlin?
Yes, well, the fact of the matter is that we have lots of challenges due to sales tax reduction, due to property tax reduction. And in fact, Chevron, as some may know, has put in for an appeal on its property tax and wants to pay millions less to the city and is requiring the city to pay back millions because they are saying their appraisal is less than what most of us feel it is. So we have some challenges here in terms of resources coming in because of the overall financial crisis and because of some, frankly, unfair appeals.
The notion, though, that, I mean, there are some very nice neighborhoods.
But
to Melinda's point, does that not bring in revenue, additional revenue? And I would think the answer is it doesn't necessarily because those property taxes don't necessarily stay in the county, do they?
The property taxes go to the county and then get allocated to the city share of it. Some go to the schools, some goes to the city, but because of the housing crisis and the lowering of value on housing, that has been substantially decreased for the city. So, you know, we are in this crunch, and, you know, and the city council as a whole has said we need a works project administrative program, having the national government put a huge amount of stimulus funding in to help cities get on their feet, like happened in Roosevelt's time, you know, take money out of the war budget. So these are some real national issues that we have to work toward.
All right. Melinda, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to another Richmond resident. Carlos is on the line. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for having me. I just had a quick comment and a question for the mayor and for the police chief. My comment is that I would like to get it out there that something that nobody has really put out there yet, and that is the fact that the Richmond Police Department was moved from the center, the civic center of Richmond, and moved to the Marina, which is a more affluent area now after all the gentrification that happened in the last few years. And I think that there is a very real and tangible connection between the gentrification that happened and the ousting of all the lower-income people who then had to move to the North Richmond area if they were going to start and stay in Richmond, where most of the violence is happening. It, to me, is quite obvious. I live on 32nd Street in Richmond, in the heart of Richmond. And it's really obvious that the people who are moved out of one area into another area, which historically has been an adversarial area for them, it's inevitably going to cause friction and trouble, which will end up in violence.
Chief Magnus, and, go ahead, Carlos, just finish your thoughts.
No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Chief, your thoughts about that?
Well, I guess I'm not entirely clear on the point that the caller is making. I live actually in the same neighborhood that he does, and I think there are most Richmond neighborhoods have been, if they've struggled with violence and poverty historically, such as the Iron Triangle area and some other areas, they are continuing to struggle with that. I don't believe that by and large the Marina and Point Richmond and some of the other neighborhoods that have been middle class have changed dynamics anytime in the recent years, and I'm not really seeing that those were areas that were lower income prior to the income level that's predominantly what they are comprised of now. I do think that, it would be nice to have the police department back in the Civic Center Plaza in the heart of the city, but because of our community policing model, we have officers that are assigned to every geographic neighborhood of the city around the clock 24/7.
Okay.
And so even though they may not, they're not all operating out of the Marina, so we distribute folks pretty fairly around
right.
the entire community.
All right, good. We're a little short on time, but let's try to get one more call in. Lisa in Richmond, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I live in the Iron Triangle. I'm lucky. There's a nice little pocket here with wonderful neighbors, but I hear the gunshots around the neighborhood, and it breaks my heart. And I want to know what I, as a resident and just an ordinary person, can do to help.
Chief Magnus?
Well, I sure feel your frustration there, because even though I'm not an Iron Triangle resident, I'm close enough that I often hear those gunshots as well, and it is very disturbing and very, very frustrating. I will say that gunfire in Richmond has decreased radically over the years. I know we've had just a recent uptick this past month in gunfire, and that's frustrating, but overall violent crime is down for the year almost 18% compared to last year. And this is the fourth year that violent crime has decreased in Richmond, so it's important that we keep some perspective. At the same time, I'm really glad that people want to help out, and I think the way to do that, they can contact our crime prevention unit. We can give them some practical suggestions. There are ways that neighborhood watch groups and neighborhood associations can be more active in creating a culture within their neighborhoods that is based on nonviolence and community advocacy, and we certainly have a number of resources that can support that. So I'd encourage the caller and anybody else who's interested to get in contact with us, and we can give you some practical ways that you can get involved with your neighbors in doing things that can really make a difference.
Mayor McLaughlin, just a few seconds left, but what would you add to that for people like Lisa that want to get involved, that want to help?
I would definitely encourage all our community to come out, to be people involved on their streets, in their city, is certainly the best way for our citizens to own their city. I also want to add that we are developing our downtown, which is really going to give a lot of vitality and vibrancy to the city. And, that's right in the center of the city. These are the kind of things, and we are putting our efforts in the center of the city, and we have for years. But
okay.
We have many challenges to overcome, of course.
All right. Gail McLaughlin, Mayor of Richmond, thanks so much for joining us this half hour. Thanks also to Chris Magnus, Chief of Police in the city. Good luck to both of you. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to look at Jerry Brown's signing of the first part of the DREAM Act, the California DREAM Act, that is, which is going to give undocumented college students in California universities access to privately funded financial aid. We'll talk about that and also the governor's sometimes strained relationship with the Latino community. Join us for that. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. More to come.